decide whether or not their victim should live or die, or how the victim should die. They'd keep me alive as long as my body would hold out, reviving me when I passed out or was close to death, always inflicting as much pain and suffering as possible. Some of them could go on for days like that. They wanted to show me they were in total control, that I was completely at their mercy. The more I cried out, the more I begged for relief, the more I would fuel and energize their dark fantasies. If I would plead for my life or regress or call out for my mommy or daddy, that would really get them off. This was my payback for 6 years of hunting the worst men on earth. My heart was racing. I was burning up. I felt a horrible jab as they inched the sharp stick even farther up my penis. My entire body convulsed in agony. Please, God, if I'm still alive, let me die quickly. And if I'm dead, deliver me quickly from the tortures of hell. Then I saw an intense, bright white light, just like I'd heard about people seeing at the moment of death. I expected to see Christ or angels or the devil. I'd heard about that too. But all I saw was that bright white light. But I did hear a voice, a comforting, reassuring voice, the most calming sound I'd ever heard. John, don't worry. We're trying to make it all better. That was the last thing I remembered. John, do you hear me? Don't worry. Take it easy. You're in the hospital. You're very sick, but we're trying to make you better, was what the nurse actually said to me. She had no idea whether or not I could hear her, but she kept repeating it, soothingly, over and over again. Though I had no idea at the time, I was in the intensive care unit of Swedish Hospital in Seattle, in a coma, on life support. My arms and legs were strapped down. Tubes, hoses, and intravenous lines penetrated my body. I was not expected to live. It was early December of 1983, and I was 38 years of age. The story begins 3 weeks earlier. On the other side of the country. I was up in New York, speaking on criminal personality profiling before an audience of about 350 members of the NYPD, the Transit Police, and the Nassau and Suffolk County Long Island Police Departments. I'd given this speech hundreds of times and could just about do the whole thing on autopilot. All of a sudden, my mind started to wander. I was aware I was still talking, but I'd broken out in a cold sweat, and I was saying to myself, how in hell am I going to handle all these cases? I was just finishing up with the Wayne Williams child-killing case in Atlanta and Buffalo's .22 caliber race murders. I'd been called in to the Trailside Killer case in San Francisco. I was consulting with Scotland Yard on the Yorkshire Ripper investigation in England. I was going back and forth to Alaska, working on the Robert Hansen case, in which an Anchorage baker was picking up prostitutes, flying them out into the wilderness, and hunting them down. I had a serial arsonist targeting synagogues in Hartford, Connecticut. And I had to fly out to Seattle the week after next to advise the Green River Task Force in what was shaping up as one of the largest serial murders in American history, the killer preying mainly on prostitutes and transients in the Seattle-Tacoma corridor. For the past 6 years, I had been developing a new approach to crime analysis, and I was the only one in the behavioral science unit working cases full-time. Everyone else in the unit was primarily an instructor. I was handling about 150 active cases at a time with no backup, and I was on the road from my office at the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia, about 125 days a year. The pressure was tremendous from local cops, who themselves were under tremendous pressure to solve cases, from the community, and from the families of victims, for whom I always had enormous empathy. I kept trying to prioritize my workload, but new requests kept pouring in daily. My associates at Quantico often said I was like a male whore. I couldn't say no to my clients. During the New York speech, I continued talking about criminal personality types.